Chapter 2. Unweaving. Elaine stepped to one side as soon as she was through the gateway, but Nynaeve trampled across the clearing, kicking up brown grasshoppers from the dead grass and peering this way and that for evidence of the warders. Of one warder, anyway. A bright red bird flashed across the clearing and was gone. Nothing else moved except the sisters. A squirrel barked somewhere in the mostly leafless trees, and then there was silence. To Elaine it seemed impossible those three could have passed this way without leaving paths as wide as that behind Nynaeve, yet she could not make out any sign that they had been there at all. She sensed Birgitta somewhere off to her left, roughly southwest, she thought, and feeling quite content, clearly in no immediate danger. Kariana, part of a protective circle gathered around Saritha and the bowl, cocked her head almost as if listening. Apparently her Sierral was to the southeast, which meant Lan was north. Oddly enough, north was the direction Nynaeve had settled down to watch, all the while muttering under her breath. Perhaps being married had created some sense of him in her. More likely she had noticed a track that escaped Elaine. Nynaeve was as skilled at woodscraft as she was with herbs. From where Elaine stood at first, Avienda was clearly visible through the gateway, studying the palace rooftops as if she expected an ambush. By her stance she could have been carrying spears, ready to leap into battle in her riding dress. She made Elaine smile, hiding how distressed she was about her problems with the gateway, so much braver than she herself. But at the same time she could not help worrying. Avienda was brave, and no one Elaine knew was better able to keep her head. She also might decide that Je'ito required her to fight when there was no chance except in running. The light around her shone so brightly it was obvious she could not draw much more of Sidar. If one of the Forsaken did appear, I should have stayed with her. Elaine rejected the thought immediately. Whatever excuse she gave, Avienda would know the truth. And she was touchy as a man sometimes, most of the time, especially when it bore upon her honor. With a sigh, Elaine let the Athaan Mier crowd her further from the gateway as they filed through. She stayed close enough to hear any shout on the other side, though, close enough to leap to Avienda's aid in a heartbeat. And for another reason. The Windfinders came through in order of rank, striving to keep their faces smooth, but even Renila relaxed tight shoulders once her bare feet were beating down the tall brown grass. Some gave a little shiver, quickly suppressed, or glanced back with round eyes at the opening hanging in mid-air. One and all they stared at Elaine suspiciously as they stepped by her, and two or three opened their mouths, perhaps to ask what she was doing, perhaps to ask or tell her to move. She was just as glad that they hurried on in obedience to Renila's curt urgings. They would have their chance to tell Aes Sedai what to do soon enough. It did not have to start with her. That thought made her stomach sink, and the number of them made her shake her head. They had the knowledge of whether to use the bowl properly, yet even Renila agreed, if reluctantly, that the more power directed through the bowl, the better the chances of being able to heal the weather. It must be directed with a precision impossible except for one woman alone, or a circle, though. A full circle of 13 it had to be. That 13 certainly would include Nynaeve and Avienda and Elaine herself, and probably a few of the kin, but Renila plainly intended to jump on the part of the bargain that said they would be allowed to learn any abilities the Aes Sedai could teach. The gateway had been the first, and forming a circle would be the second. A wonder she had not brought every Windfinder in the harbor. Imagine trying to deal with 300 or 400 of these women. Elaine offered a small prayer of thanks that there were only 20. She was not standing there to count them, though. As each Windfinder passed, barely more than a pace away, she let herself feel the woman's strength in the power. Earlier there had been time to get close enough to only a handful, what with all the trouble of convincing Renila to come at all. Apparently achieving rank among the Windfinders had nothing to do with either age or strength. Renila was far from the strongest, even in the first 3 or 4, while one woman toward the rear, Sanina, had weathered cheeks and thickly grayed hair. Strangely, by the marks in her ears, it seemed that Sanina might once have worn more than 6 earrings, and thicker ones than she did now. Elaine sorted and stored away faces and the names she knew with a growing sense of complacency. The Windfinders might have secured an upper hand of sorts, and she and Nynaeve might be in deep trouble, very deep, with both Egwene and the Hall of the Tower once the terms of their bargain became known. But none of these women would stand particularly high among Aes Sedai. Certainly not low, but not high. She told herself not to feel smug. It changed nothing in what they had agreed, yet it was very hard not to. These were the best the Atha'an could produce, after all, here in Ebu Dar, anyway. And if they had been Aes Sedai, every one of them, from Curin with her stony black stare to Ranila herself, would have listened when she spoke and stood when she entered a room, if they were Aes Sedai and behaving as they should. And then the end of the line appeared, and she gave a start as a young Windfinder off one of the smaller ships passed her, a round-cheeked woman called Rainin, in plain blue silks, with barely a half-dozen ornaments hanging from her nose-chain. The two apprentices, boyishly slim Talan and big-eyed Matara, scurried at the very tail with harried expressions. They had not earned the nose-ring yet, much less the chain, and only a single thin gold earring in the left ear balanced the three in the right. Her eyes followed the three of them just short of staring, perhaps not short of it at that. The Atha'an Mier clustered with Ranila again, most, like her, glaring hungrily at the Aes Sedai and the bowl. The last three women stood at the rear, the apprentices with the air of those uncertain whether they had a right to be there at all, Rainin folding her arms in imitation of Ranila, yet doing little better than the other two. The Windfinder on a darter, the least of the sea folk vessels, likely seldom found herself in company with the Windfinder to her clan wave mistress, not to mention the Windfinder to the mistress of the ships. Rainin was easily as strong as Lelaine or Romanda, and Matara on a level with Elaine herself, while Talan, so meek in her red linen blouse, with eyes that seemed permanently downcast, came very close to Nynaeve. Very close. More, Elaine knew she herself had not yet reached her full potential, and neither had Nynaeve. How close were Matara and Talan? She had grown accustomed to knowing that only Nynaeve and the Forsaken were stronger than she. Well, Egwene, but she had been forced, and her own potential and Avienda's matched Egwene's. "So much for complacency," she told herself ruefully. Linny would have said it was what she deserved for taking things for granted. Laughing softly at herself, Elaine turned back to check on Avienda, but the knitting circle stood rooted to one spot in front of the gateway, twitching at cold stares from Kariana and Saritha. All but Sumiko, and she did not move away either, for all that she had met the sisters' gazes. Kirstian appeared ready to burst into tears. Suppressing a sigh, Elaine herded the kinswomen out of the way of the stable folk waiting to bring the horses through. The knitting circle went along like sheep. She was the shepherd, Merilila and the rest the wolves, and they would have moved faster if not for Ispan. Famela, one of only four among the knitting circle without a touch of grey or white in her hair, and Eldes, a fierce-eyed woman when she was not looking at an Aes Sedai, held Ispan by the arms. They could not seem to decide between holding her firmly enough to keep her upright and not clutching her too tightly, with the result that the black sister moved in a bobbing fashion, sagging halfway to her knees when they loosened their grips, then pulled back up just before she fell completely. "Forgive me, Aes Sedai," Famela kept murmuring to Ispan with a faint Tarabonar accent. "Oh, I am sorry, Aes Sedai," Eldes winced and gave a little moan every time Ispan stumbled. Just as if Ispan had not helped murder two of their number and the light alone knew how many others. They were fussing over a woman who was going to die. The killings in the White Tower that Ispan had conspired at were enough to condemn her by themselves. "Take her over there somewhere," Elaine told them, waving away from the gateway into the clearing. They obeyed, bobbing curtsies and nearly dropping Ispan, murmuring apologies to Elaine and to the hooded prisoner. Rihanna and the rest scurried along, anxiously eyeing the sisters around Marilla. Almost immediately the war of glares started up again. The Aes Sedai at the kinswomen, the knitting circle at the windfinders, and the Athaan Mier at anybody their eyes fell on. Elaine clamped her teeth shut. She was not going to shout at them. Nynaeve always got better results with yells, anyway. But she did want to shake some sense into every one of them, shake them until their teeth rattled, including Nynaeve, who was supposed to be getting everyone organized instead of staring into the trees. But what if it had been Rand who was going to die, unless she could find a way to save him? Suddenly tears trembled on the edge of falling, stinging her eyes. Rand was going to die, and there was nothing she could do to stop it.
"Peel the apple in your hand, girl, not the one on the tree," Linny's thin voice seemed to whisper in her ear. "Tears are for after. They just waste time before."
"Thank you, Linny," Elaine murmured. Her old nurse was an irritating woman sometimes, never admitting that any of her charges had really grown up, but her advice was always good. Just because Nynaeve was slacking her duties was no reason for Elaine to slack hers. Servants had started trotting horses through right on the heels of the knitting circle, beginning with the pack horses. None of those first animals carried anything so frivolous as clothes. They could walk if the riding horses needed to be abandoned on the other side of the gateway, and wear what they stood up in if the rest of the pack animals had to be left behind. But what was on those first horses could not be left for the Forsaken. Elaine motioned the leather-cheeked woman leading the very first to follow her aside, out of the way of the others. Untying and tossing back the stiff canvas cover on one of the wide wicker panniers revealed a great heap of what appeared to be rubbish, stuffed in every which way, right up to the top, some of it wrapped in cloth that was falling to pieces. The greater part of it probably was rubbish. Embracing Sidar, Elaine began sorting. A rusted breastplate quickly went onto the ground, along with a broken table leg, a cracked platter, a badly dented pewter pitcher, and a bolt of rotted, unidentifiable cloth that almost broke apart in her hands. The storeroom where they found the bowl of the winds had been stuffed full. Things that should have been on a refuse heap jumbled in with more objects of the power than just the bowl, some in beetle-riddled casks or chests, some carelessly stacked. For hundreds and hundreds of years, the kin had hidden away all things they found that were connected to the power, fearful of using them, and fearful of delivering them to Aes Sedai, until that very morning. This was the first chance Elaine had had to see what was worth keeping. The light send that the dark friends had not gotten away with anything important. They had taken some, but certainly less than a quarter of what the room had held, rubbish included. The light send she found something they could use. People had died to bring these things out of the Rahad. She did not channel, just held the power as she lifted each item. A chipped clay cup, 3 broken plates, a child's moth-eaten dress and an old boot with a hole worn through the side all fell to the ground. A stone carving a little larger than her hand. It felt like stone. It might have been a carving, though it did not exactly look carved for some reason. All deep blue curves, vaguely like roots. It seemed to warm faintly at her touch. It held a resonance to Sidar. That was the closest word she could think of. What it was meant to do, she had no idea, but it was a Turangrial without any doubt. It went on the other side of her, away from the pile of rubbish. The heap of refuse continued to grow, but so did the other, if more slowly, things that had nothing in common except the faint warmth and the sense of echoing the power. A small box that felt like ivory, covered in wavering red and green stripes. She set it down carefully without opening the hinged lid. You could never tell what might trigger a Turangrial. A black rod no thicker than her little finger, a pace in length, stiff yet so flexible she thought she could have doubled it into a circle. A tiny stoppered vial that might have been crystal, with the dark red liquid inside. The figure of a stout, bearded man with a jolly smile holding a book. 2 feet tall, it appeared to be age-darkened bronze, and took both of her hands to move. Other things. Most was trash, though, and none was what she truly wanted. Not yet. "Is this the time to be doing that?" Nynaeve asked. She straightened hastily from the small cluster of Turangrial, grimacing and rubbing her hand on her skirt. "That rod feels like pain," she muttered. The hard-faced woman holding the packhorse's head blinked at the rod and edged away. Elaine eyed the rod. Nynaeve's occasional impressions about objects she touched could be useful, but she did not stop sorting. There had been too much pain lately to need any more, surely. Not that what Nynaeve sensed was always that straightforward. The rod might have been present when a great deal of pain was caused without being the cause in itself. The pannier was almost empty. Some of what was on the other side of the horse would have to be shifted to balance the weight. "If there's an Angreal in this somewhere, Nynaeve, I would like to find it before Mogedion taps one of us on the shoulder." Nynaeve grunted sourly, but she peered into the wicker basket. Dropping another table leg, that made 3, none of which matched, Elaine spared a glance for the clearing. All of the pack horses were out, and the mounts were coming through the gateway now, filling the open space between the trees with bustle and confusion. Merilila and the other Aes Sedai already sat their saddles, barely concealing their impatience to be off, while Paul fussed hurriedly with her mistress's saddlebags. But the windfinders, graceful afoot, graceful on their ships, they were unused to horses. Ranila was trying to mount from the wrong side, and the gentle bay mare chosen for her danced slow circles around the liveried man who was gripping the bridle with one hand, while tugging his hair in frustration with the other, and vainly trying to correct the windfinder. 2 of the stablewomen were attempting to hoist Dorilla, who served the wave mistress of Clan Somarin, into her saddle, while a 3rd, holding the grey's head, wore the tight face of someone trying not to laugh. Rainin was on the back of a leggy brown gelding, but somehow without either foot in the stirrups or the reins in her hands, and having considerable trouble finding any of them. And those 3 seemed to be having the easiest time of it. Horses whinnied and danced and rolled their eyes, and windfinders shouted curses in voices that could have been heard over a gale. One of them knocked a serving man flat with her fist, and 3 more stable folk were trying to catch mounts that had gotten free. There was also what she had expected to see, if Nynaeve was no longer keeping her private watch. Lan stood by his black warhorse, Mandarb, dividing his gaze between the tree line, the gateway, and Nynaeve. Birgitta came striding out of the woods, shaking her head, and a moment later Sierral trotted from the trees, but with no sense of urgency. There was nothing out there to threaten or inconvenience them. Nynaeve was watching her, eyebrows raised high. "I didn't say anything," Elaine said. Her hand closed on something small, wrapped in rotting cloth that might have been white once, or brown. She knew immediately what was inside. "A good thing for you," Nynaeve grumbled, not quite far enough under her breath. "I can't abide women who poke their noses into other people's business." Elaine let it pass without so much as a start. She was proud that she did not have to bite her tongue. Stripping away the decayed cloth revealed a small amber brooch in the shape of a turtle. It looked like amber anyway, and it might have been amber once, but when she opened herself to the source through it, Sidar rushed into her, a torrent compared to what she could draw safely on her own. Not a strong Angreal, but far better than nothing. With it she could handle twice as much of the power as Nynaeve, and Nynaeve herself would do better still. Releasing the extra flow of Sidar, she slipped the brooch into her belt pouch with a smile of delight and went back to searching. Where there was one, there might be more. And now that she had one to study, she might be able to reason out how to make an Angreal. That was something she had wished for. It was all she could do not to take the brooch out again and begin probing it right there. Van Deen had been eyeing Nynaeve and her for some time, and now she heeled her slab-sided gelding over to them and dismounted. The groom at the pack-horse's head managed a decent, if awkward, curtsy, more than she had for Elaine or Nynaeve. "You're being careful," Van Deen said to Elaine, "and that's very good. But it might be better to leave these things alone until they're in the tower." Elaine's mouth tightened. "In the tower?" Until they could be examined by someone else was what she meant. Someone older and supposedly more experienced. "I do know what I'm doing, Van Deen. I have made Turangreal, after all. Nobody else living has done that." She had taught the basics to some sisters, but no one had managed the trick of it by the time she left for Ebudar. The older Green nodded, flipping her reins idly against the palm of her riding glove. "Martina Janata also knew what she was doing." "So I understand," she said casually. "She was the last sister to really make a business of studying Turangreal. She did it for over 40 years, almost from the time she reached the shawl. She was careful, too, so I was told. Then one day Martina's maid found her unconscious on the floor of her sitting room. Burned out." Even in a conversational tone, those words were a sharp slap. Van Deen's voice did not alter a hair, though. "Her warder was dead from the shock. Not unusual in cases like that. When Martina came to 3 days later, she couldn't recall what she'd been working with. She couldn't remember the preceding week at all. That was more than 25 years ago, and no one since has had the nerve to touch any of the Turangreal that were in her rooms. Her notes mentioned every last one, and everything she had discovered was innocuous, innocent, even frivolous. But," Van Deen shrugged, "she found something she wasn't expecting." Elaine peeked at Birgitta and found Birgitta looking back at her. She did not need to see the worried frown on the other woman's face. It was mirrored in her mind, in the small patch of her mind that was Birgitta, and in the rest. Birgitta felt her worry, and she felt Birgitta's, until sometimes it was hard to say which was which. She risked more than herself. But she did know what she was doing, more than anyone else there, at least. And even if none of the Forsaken appeared, they needed all of the Angreal she could find. "What happened to Martina?" Nynaeve asked quietly. "Afterward, I mean." She could seldom hear of anyone being hurt without wanting to heal them. She wanted to heal everything. Van Deen grimaced. She might have been the one to bring up Martina, but Aes Sedai did not like talking about women who had been burned out or stilled. They did not like remembering them. "She vanished once she was well enough to slip out of the tower," she said hurriedly. "The important thing to remember is that she was cautious. I never met her, but I've been told she treated every Turangreal as if she had no idea what it might do next, even the one that makes the cloth for warders' cloaks, and nobody has ever been able to make that do anything else. She was careful, and it did her no good." Nynaeve laid an arm across the nearly empty pannier. "Maybe you really should," she began.
"No!"
Marilla shrieked. Elaine spun, instinctively opening herself through the Angreal again, only half-conscious of Sidar flooding into Nynaeve and Van Deen. The glow of the power sprang up around every woman in the clearing who could embrace the source. Marilla was straining forward in her saddle, eyes bulging, one hand reaching toward the gateway. Elaine frowned. There was nothing there except Avienda, and the last four warders, startled in the middle of walking away, searching for the threat with swords half-drawn. Then she realized what Avienda was doing, and nearly lost Sidar in her shock. The gateway trembled as Avienda carefully picked apart the weave that had made it. It shivered and flexed, the edges wavering. The last flows came loose, and instead of winking out, the opening shimmered the view through it of the courtyard fading away until it evaporated like mist in the sun. "That is impossible," Renila said incredulously. An astonished murmur of agreement broke out among the windfinders. The kinswomen gaped at Avienda, mouths working soundlessly. Elaine nodded slowly in spite of herself. Clearly it was possible, but one of the first things she had been told as a novice was that never, ever under any circumstances was she to try what Avienda had just done. Picking apart a weave, any weave, rather than simply letting it dissipate, could not be done, as she had been told, not without inevitable disaster. Inevitable.
"You fool girl!"
Van Deen snapped, her face a thunderhead. She strode toward Avienda, dragging her gelding behind. "Do you realize what you almost did? One slip, one, and there's no saying what the weave will snap into or what it will do. You could have completely destroyed everything for 100 paces, 500, everything. You could have burned yourself out and—" "It was necessary," Avienda cut in. A babble erupted from the mounted Aes Sedai crowding around her and Van Deen, but she glared at them and raised her voice over theirs. "I know the dangers, Van Deen Namel, but it was necessary. Is this another thing you Aes Sedai cannot do? The wise ones say any woman can learn if she is taught. Some women more and some less. But any woman, if she can pick out embroidery." She did not quite sneer. Not quite.
"This is not embroidery, girl."
Marilla's voice was deep winter ice. "Whatever so-called training you received among your people, you cannot possibly know what you are playing with. You will promise me, swear to me, that you will never do this again." "Her name should be in the novice book," Saritha said firmly, glaring across the bowl still held firmly to her bosom. "I've always said it. She should be entered in the book." Kariana nodded, her stern gaze measuring Avienda for a novice dress. "That might not be necessary for the moment," Adelias told Avienda, leaning forward in her saddle. "But you must let yourself be guided by us." The brown sister's tone was much milder than the others, yet she was not making a suggestion. A month or so earlier, Avienda might have begun to wilt under all that Aes Sedai disapproval, but not now. Elaine hurriedly pushed in among the horses before her friend decided to draw the knife she was fondling, or to do something worse. "Maybe somebody should ask why she thought it was necessary," she said, slipping an arm around Avienda's shoulders as much to keep her arms at her sides as for comfort. Avienda did not quite include her in the exasperated look she gave the other sisters. "This leaves no residue," she said patiently, too patiently. "The residues of a weave this large might be read 2 days from now." Marilla snorted, a very strong sound to come from that slight body. "That is a rare talent, girl. Neither Teslin nor Jolene has it. Or do you Aiel Wilders all learn that as well?" "Few can do it," Avienda admitted calmly. "But I can." That produced a different sort of stare from Elaine as well. It was a very rare talent. She did not seem to notice. "Do you claim that none of the Shadow Souls can?" she went on. The tightness of her shoulder under Elaine's hand said she was not so cool as she pretended. "Are you such fools that you leave tracks for your enemies to follow? Any who could read the residues could make a gateway to this spot." That would have taken great dexterity, very great dexterity, but the suggestion was enough to leave Marilla blinking. Adelias opened her mouth, then closed it without speaking, and Van Deen frowned thoughtfully. Saritha simply looked worried. Who could say what talents the Forsaken had, what skill? Strangely, all the fierceness drained out of Avienda. Her eyes fell, her shoulders loosened. "Perhaps I should not have taken the risk," she muttered. "With that man watching me, I could not think clearly, and when he disappeared..." A little of her spirit returned, but not a great deal. "I do not think a man could read my weaves," she said to Elaine. "But if he was one of the shadow-souled, or even the Golam, the shadow-souled no more than any of us. If I was wrong, I have great toe, but I do not think I was. I do not think it." "What man?" Nynaeve demanded. Her hat had been knocked askew in pushing among the horses, and that, with the tight frown she directed at everyone impartially, made her look ready for a fight. Perhaps she was. Kariana's gelding accidentally nudged her with a shoulder, and she swatted the blue dun's nose. "A servant," Marilla said dismissively. "Whatever orders Tylin gave, Altaran servants are an independent lot. Or perhaps her son. That boy is too curious by half." The sisters around her nodded, and Kariana said, "One of the Forsaken would hardly have stood and watched. You said so yourself." She was patting her gelding's neck and frowning accusingly at Nynaeve. Kariana was one of those who gave her horse the sort of affection most people reserved for infants. She was frowning at Nynaeve, and Nynaeve took the words for her, too. "Maybe it was a servant, and maybe it was Beslan. Maybe." Nynaeve's sniff said she did not believe it, or that she wanted them to believe she did not. She could tell you to your face that you were a blind idiot, yet let anyone else say it, and she would defend you until she went hoarse. Of course, she did not seem ready to decide whether she liked Avienda, but she definitely did not like the older Aes Sedai. She tugged her hat almost straight, and her frown swept across them, then started over. "Whether it was Beslan or the Dark One, there's no call to stand here all day. We need to get ready and move on to the farm. Well, move!" She clapped her hands sharply, and even Van Deen gave a little start. There was little preparation left to do when the sisters moved their horses away. Lan and the other warders had not sat on their heels once they realized there was no danger. Some of the servants had gone back through the gateway before Avienda disposed of it, but the rest stood with the 36 or so pack horses, occasionally glancing at the Aes Sedai, clearly wondering what marvel they might produce next. The windfinders were all mounted, if awkwardly, and holding their reins as though expecting their horses to bolt any moment, or perhaps sprout wings and take flight. So were the knitting circle, with a good deal more grace, unconcerned that their skirts and petticoats were pushed up past their knees, and with Ispan still hooded and tied across a saddle like a sack. She could not possibly have sat upright on a horse, yet even Sumiko's eyes popped whenever they touched her. Glaring about her, Nynaeve looked ready to tongue-lash everybody into doing what they had already done, but only until Lan handed her the reins of her plump brown mare. She had adamantly refused the gift of a better horse from Tylin. Her hand trembled a little when it touched Lan's, and her face changed color as she swallowed the anger she had been about to unleash. When he offered a hand for her foot, she stared at him for a moment as if wondering what he was about, then colored again when he boosted her to her saddle. Elaine could only shake her head. She hoped she did not turn into an idiot when she married, if she married. Brigitte brought her silvery-gray mare and the yellow dun Avienda rode, but she seemed to understand that Elaine wanted a private word with Avienda. She nodded almost as if Elaine had spoken, swung up onto her mouse-colored gelding, and rode to where the other warders were waiting. They greeted her with nods and began discussing something in low voices. By the glances directed at the sisters, the something had to do with taking care of Aes Sedai, whether Aes Sedai wanted care taken or not. Including herself, Elaine noted grimly. There was no time now for that, though. Avienda stood fiddling with her horse's reins, staring at the animal like a novice staring at a kitchen full of greasy pots. Very likely, Avienda saw small difference between having to scrub pots and having to ride. Snugging her green riding gloves, Elaine casually shifted Lioness to block them from the other's view, then touched Avienda's arm. "Talking to Adelias or Van Deen might help," she said gently. She had to be very careful here, as careful as with any Turangrial. "They're old enough to know more than you might suspect. There has to be a reason you've been... having trouble with traveling? That was a mild way of putting it. Avienda almost had failed to make the weave work at all in the beginning. Careful. Avienda was far more important than any Turangrial ever could be. They might be able to help. How can they? Avienda stared stiffly at the saddle on her gelding. They cannot travel. How could any of them know how to help? Abruptly her shoulders slumped and she turned her head to Elaine. Shockingly unshed tears glistened in her green eyes. That isn't the truth, Elaine. Not the whole truth. They cannot help, but you are my near sister. You have the right to know. They think I panicked at a servant. If I ask for help, it must all come out. That I traveled once to run from a man I hoped in my soul would catch me. To run like a rabbit. To run wanting to be caught. How could I let them know such shame? Even if they really could help, how could I? Elaine wished she did not know. About the catching part, at least. About the fact that Rand had caught her. Snatching the flecks of jealousy that suddenly were floating through her, she pushed them into a sack and stuffed it into the back of her head. Then she jumped up and down on it for good measure. When a woman plays the fool, look for the man. That was one of Lini's favorites. Another was, kittens tangle your yarn, men tangle your wits, and it's simple as breathing for both. She drew a deep breath.
No one will know from me, Avienda. I'll help you as much as I can, if I can figure out how.
Not that there was much she could think to do. Avienda was remarkably quick at seeing how weaves were formed, much quicker than she herself. Avienda merely nodded and scrambled clumsily into her saddle, showing a bit more grace than the sea folk. There was a man watching Elaine, and he was no servant. Looking Elaine right in the eye, she added, "He frightened me." An admission she likely would have made to no one else in the world.
"We're safe from him now, whoever he was," Elaine said, turning Linus to follow Nynaeve and Lan from the clearing. In truth, it very likely had been a servant, but she would never tell that to anyone, Avienda least of all. "We're safe, and in a few more hours we will reach the Kin's farm, we'll use the bowl, and the world will be right again."
Well, somewhat. The sun seemed lower than it had in the stable yard, but she knew that was only imagination. For once, they had gained a clear jump on the shadow.
From behind a screen of white wrought iron, Moradin watched the last of the horses vanish through the gateway, and then the tall young woman and the four warders. It was possible they were carrying away some item he could use, an Angreal attuned to men, perhaps, but the chances were small. For the rest, the Terangreal, the greatest likelihood was that they would kill themselves trying to puzzle out how to use them. Samael was a fool to have risked so much to seize a collection of no one knew what. But then Samael had never been half as clever as he thought. He himself would not disrupt his own plans merely on the off chance to see what scraps of civilization he could find. Only idle curiosity had brought him here. He liked to know what others thought important. But it was dross. He was about to turn away when the outlines of the gateway suddenly began to flex and tremble. Transfixed, he watched until the opening simply melted. He had never been a man to give way to obscenities, but several rose in his mind. What had the woman done? These barbarous rustics offered too many surprises. A way to heal being severed, however imperfectly, that was impossible. Except that they had done it. Involuntary rings. Those warders and the bond they shared with their Aes Sedai. He had known of that for a long, long time, but whenever he thought he had the measure of them, these primitives revealed some new skill, did something that no one in his own age had dreamed of. Something the pinnacle of civilization had not known. What had the girl done?
"Great master."
Moradin barely turned his head from the window.
"Yes, Madic?"
Her soul be damned, what had the girl done? The balding man in green and white, who had slipped into the small room, bowed deeply before falling to his knees. One of the upper servants in the palace, Matic, with his long face, possessed a pompous dignity that he tried to maintain even now. Moradin had seen men who stood far higher do far worse. "Great master, I have learned what the Aes Sedai brought to the palace this morning. It is said they found a great treasure, hidden in ancient days, gold and jewels and heartstone, artifacts from Shiota and Aharon, and even the Age of Legends. There are said to be things among them that use the One Power. It is said that one can control the weather. No one knows where they are going, Great Master. The palace is aquiver with talk, but 10 tongues name 10 different destinations." Moradin went back to studying the stableyard below as soon as Matic spoke. Ridiculous tales of gold in Quendiar held no interest. Nothing would make a gateway behave that way, unless... Could she actually have unraveled the web? Death held no fear for him. Coldly he considered the possibility that he had been within sight of an unraveling web. One that had been unmade successfully. Another impossibility, casually offered up by these... Something Matic had said caught his ear. "The weather, Matic?" The shadows of the palace spires had barely lengthened from their bases, but there was not a cloud to shield the baking city. "Yes, great master. It is called the Bowl of the Winds." The name meant nothing to him. But a Terengriol to control the weather... In his own age, weather had been carefully regulated with the use of Terengriol. One of the surprises of this age, one of the smaller, it had seemed, was that there were those who could manipulate weather to a degree that should have required one of those Terengriol. One such device should not be enough to affect even a large part of a single continent. But what could these women do with it? What if they used a ring? He seized the true power without thought, the saw billowing black across his sight. His fingers tightened in the wrought iron grill across the window. The metal groaned, twisting, not from his grip, but from the tendrils of the true power, drawn from the great lord himself that wreathed around the grillwork, flexing as he flexed his hand in anger. The great lord would not be pleased. He had strained from his prison to touch the world enough to fix the seasons in place. He was impatient to touch the world more, to shatter the void that contained him, and he would not be pleased. Rage enveloped Moradin, blood pounding in his ears. A moment past, he had not cared where those women went, but now... Somewhere far from here. People fleeing ran as far and as fast as they could. Somewhere they felt safe. No use sending Matic to ask questions, no use squeezing anyone here. They would not have been fool enough to leave anyone behind alive who knew their destination. Not to Tar Valon, to Althor, to that band of rebel Aes Sedai. In all three places he had eyes, some that did not know they served him. All would serve him before the end. He would not allow chance slips to spoil his plans now. Abruptly he heard something other than the thundering drumbeat of his own fury, a bubbling sound. He looked at Matic curiously and stepped back from the spreading puddle on the floor. It seemed that, in his anger, he had seized at more than the wrought iron screen with the true power. Remarkable how much blood could be squeezed from a human body. He let what remained of the man fall without regret, indeed thinking only that when Matic was found, the Aes Sedai would surely be blamed. A small addition to the chaos growing in the world. Ripping a hole in the fabric of the pattern, he traveled with the true power. He had to find those women before they used this Bowl of the Winds. And failing that... He disliked people meddling with his carefully laid plans. Those who did so and lived... lived to pay. The Golam stepped into the room cautiously, nostrils already twitching with the scent of still-hot blood. The livid burn on its cheek seemed like a live coal. The Golam appeared to be merely a slender man, a little taller than average in this time, yet it had never encountered anything that could harm it. Until that man with the medallion. What might have been smile or snarl bared its teeth. Curious, it peered around the room, but there was nothing beyond the crushed corpse on the floor tiles. And a feel of something. Not the one power, but something that made it itch, if not quite in the same way. Curiosity had brought it here. Parts of the grill over the window were crushed, pulling the whole thing loose at the sides. The golem seemed to remember something that made it itch in that manner, yet so much of what it recalled was fogged and dim. The world had changed, as it seemed, in the blink of an eye. There had been a world of war and killing on a huge scale, with weapons that reached across miles, across thousands of miles. And then there was this. But the golem had not changed. It was still the most dangerous weapon of all. Its nostrils flared again, though it was not by scent that it tracked those who could channel. The one power had been used below and miles to the north. To follow or not? The man who had wounded it was not with them. It had made sure of that before leaving the high vantage place. The one who commanded it wanted the man who had wounded it dead, perhaps as much as he did the women. But the women were an easier target. The women had been named, too, and for the time being, it was constrained. For its entire existence, it had been compelled to obey one or another human, but its mind held the concept of not being constrained. It must follow the women it wanted to follow. The moment of death, when it felt the ability to channel vanish along with life, produced ecstasy, rapture. But it was hungry, too. And there was time. Where they could run, it could follow. Settling fluidly beside the mangled body, it began to feed. Fresh blood, hot blood, was a necessity. But human blood always held the sweetest savor.